Continuing from this morning's class, the same section of the Bhagavatam. So this is Canto 3, Chapter 21. And we'll discuss verses 29 and 30, and we'll just touch on 31. But since some of you were with us this morning and some of you were not with us this morning, I'll do a little review. Mini review. The chapter title is Conversation Between Manu and Kardama. Manu refers to Swayambhuva Manu, the first of the 14 Manus. So this is like in the very beginning part of the day of Brahma. It's not at the beginning of the life of Brahma, although it's very similar in the beginning of the life of Brahma, his first day and his second day, and each day is very similar, but specifically it's not the first life of Brahma day, but it's because it's the periodic, we know that from the earlier chapters, it's the cyclical awakening of Lord Brahma in the beginning of Brahma's day and what he does to recreate that part of the universe that's been dissolved. In any case, it's really, really early in the dawn of creation, at least in terms of Brahma's day. Because during his night, the Vedic picture of the universe is there's 14 planetary systems, 7 upper, 7 lower, 7 plus 7 equals 14, right? So at the time of his night, there's a partial annihilation, which means that the 7 lower and 3 of the 7 upper planets are dissolved. Anyway, without all the detail. So, that at his night, there's a flood. It's like, you know, a tablet, like an Alka-Seltzer or something. You put in a glass of water and it fizzes and then it's gone. But it's not gone, it's just dissolved within the water. So the elements of universal creation are similarly dissolved. The planets are dissolved and the forms of species of life are dissolved. And when Brahma wakes up in the morning, he does his morning sadhana, which is described in the Bhagavatam, what that sadhana is. And then he goes to the office. After he does his sadhana and has breakfast, he goes to the office and does his work. His work is he recreates the lower portions of the universe, 7 plus 3, the 10 planetary systems that were dissolved. And the ocean of partial devastation. And then the personalities who assist him are also generated. And one of those persons that's generated is Manu. At least the first of the 14 Manus comes directly from the body of Lord Brahma. It's pretty neat. He doesn't need help from his wife. He just produces Manu, and not only Manu, but Manu's wife, and not only Manu and Manu's wife, but they're not like little babies, they're adults. He's got a mustache and long hair, and he's ready to do his service. And following Manu, there's some sons, other sons of Lord Brahma. They're great rishis, 10 great sages. Actually, if you read the Bhagavatam carefully, it's 10 plus 1. And Kardam is that number 11. But he's the direct son of Lord Brahma. Are you all right? Yeah. So Kardama is given some service by his father. Please assist me. Same thing he said to the four Kumaras, and they said, no thanks, Dad. He requested Kardama to assist him in populating these planets in the universe that he's created. So he agrees, but it's not like he just runs off and gets married and starts producing children. For 10,000 years, he engages in austerities and penances and the process for the age, meditation on the personality of Godhead. And the personality of Godhead appears, not just like in his heart, of course in his heart, like visually in his heart, but before him, riding on the back of Garuda. And Kardama offers his obeisances, and Lord Vishnu then, after receiving his prayers, begins speaking to him, and that's what we discussed this morning. He's still in kirtan. So is he. He's playing Radung and he's playing cartels. And okay, so how about you? You're still in kirtan? You're okay. Okay. He's just playing his... Okay. I'll read the verses again because they're very nice. It puts things in perspective. Lord Vishnu, first of all, says, you pleased me very much. So much so I've come before you. I know what's in your heart. Of course, I'm in your heart. But you want to serve me in a particular way. I know what it is. He doesn't tell him what it is, but he says, I've made arrangements to fulfill that desire that's in your heart. His desire is, he has vatsalya rasa, or parental affection for the personality of Godhead. He, Kardama, would like the personality of Godhead as his son. He also would like to, you know, fulfill the desire of his father. He's an obedient son. So he wants to assist his father in producing good praja. So, immediately, Manu says, not tomorrow, but the day after tomorrow, Manu, Swayambhuva Manu, is going to come here into the forest, into this dense, dark jungle, where you have your little cottage by the side of the sacred river. He's going to come right here, along with his wife, Shatarupa, and they're going to have a discussion with you about your marrying their daughter. And basically it's, say yes. Because she's very qualified, as are you. And as she is desiring a qualified husband, and her parents are desiring a qualified husband for her, you're desiring a qualified wife, and she's it. And it's my arrangement. So say yes. And where we ended up was, that princess, O holy sage, will be just the type you have been thinking of in your heart for all these long years, like, you know, 10,000 years. It's a long time to desire particular, although he didn't have a name attached to the person, but, you know, a qualified wife. She will soon be yours and will serve you to your heart's content. And the purport that we discussed at length this morning is how, well, we talked about moving from Sakam Bhakti to Nishkam Bhakti. Where's our... Remember the meaning? Nishkam? Nishkam? Yes? No? Do you remember? What does kama mean? Desire. Nishkama means? Sakama means? And nishka, they're opposites. You forgot. Okay, he remembers. He's very enthusiastic to say it too. What is it?
Sakama means with desire.
With desire. Sakama. And nishkama means?
Without desire.
Specifically without selfish desire. Because the soul always has desire. So it's desire to serve Krishna without material desire. Pure devotion. Squeaky clean. No residual anything left over. Just desire to serve Krishna. Nishkam Bhakti. So we talked about how to move from where we are, Sakama. We have a desire for serving Krishna. We have a whole bunch of other things going on. And how to go from that to Nishkam Bhakti. So we, rather than retell the whole morning class, that's what we discussed. And it's made possible by connecting our desire with pleasing Krishna. And connecting the desire with Krishna along with the primary activities of bhakti. You know, the nine processes of bhakti. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandhanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. Very good. Very good. So connecting our theistic conduct or our fulfilling our desires in a regulated manner along with chanting. Keep it simple. But, you know, for the cultivating for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. Not cultivating, oh, I got a license to enjoy. Not that. But subordinating the desire to the satisfaction of Krishna. So we're going to hear something more about that in this verse that we're discussing today. And so what I'd like to do today is a little bit the connection between Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. There's a connection. And the one simple way of describing the connection is Prabhupada described Bhagavad Gita as the undergraduate and Bhagavatam as the graduate study. So something like in learning math, kids learn in school, you know, addition and subtraction, and then multiplication, and you know, so when it's in advanced math, 2 + 2 is still 4, and you know, 4 + 4 is still 8, and so forth. But just the way in which you use those essential facts or axioms just gets more sophisticated. That's all. So you need to learn, you know, the basics before you go on to advanced math. So similarly, in Srimad Bhagavatam, I mean, just like in the beginning of the Hare Krishna movement, you probably know this, Prabhupada brought with him the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in 3 volumes. He had a manuscript from Bhagavad Gita, which unfortunately a crazy person stole, along with his typewriter. One of those manual, you know, kind of typewriters. Not even electric, but just manual. They stole the typewriter, and they stole this Bhagavad Gita manuscript. Now what's a crazy person going to do with a Bhagavad Gita manuscript? Nothing. So Prabhupada had to do the Bhagavad Gita commentary all over again. Although he had. But he printed the Bhagavatam and then was planning to print the Bhagavad Gita here. So he did print it here, but after he made a second version, because the first one was stolen. But there's symmetry between Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam in that the message is the same, just one is undergraduate and the other is postgraduate study. So, Bhagavad Gita question. There's a nice verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna speaks about dedicating everything to him. There's a number of them, but there's one very special one. Dedicating everything to him. Whatever you do, whatever you eat. Just you say it loud. You have a strong voice. Go ahead. Very good. Do any of you boys know the verse? Yes? Can you say it loud enough that they can hear it back there? A little louder, please. Yat tapasyasi kaunteya tat karashva madarpanam. You know the verse? Okay. Arpanam. Any you know any of you adults here, you know somebody, a girl that's by the name Arpana? I know a girl named Arpana. What does Arpana mean? Worship. Arpana means worship. So Krishna's in that verse saying, Mad Arpanam, worship me by offering all these things. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer and give away, whatever austerity, etc. Offer that to me, and that becomes worship of Krishna. So some people take that verse to say, work is my worship. I just work, and that's my worship. You know, God's everywhere, I just work. Work is worship. You've heard that one before? Yeah. Krishna kind of disappeared, but anyway, work is worship. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, so this is now the postgraduate study. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is having a discussion with Ramananda Roy on the bank of River Kaveri. And Lord Chaitanya is asking Ramananda Roy, like the beginning of their discussion is, what's the goal of life? That's where they started. And how to achieve it. And one of the verses that Ramananda Roy offered to Lord Chaitanya was that verse. Yat karoshi, yat asnasi, etc. And what did Lord Chaitanya say? That's what he said. This is external. And you read the purport carefully, and it's a verse, according to Prabhupada's purport, that teaches karma yoga. Karma yoga. If you're feeling like bored, you're free to go and be happy somewhere. If you want to stay, you can stay, but you know, pay attention. Thanks. See you later. Okay. Lord Chaitanya said that's external. And in the purport, Prabhupada says it's karma yoga. So what's external about karma? What's the difference between karma yoga and bhakti yoga? Oh, scholars of Bhagavad Gita, except for Yugal Kishore, what's the distinction between karma yoga and bhakti yoga? That's a good question, isn't it? Because in some ways, when you read Bhagavad Gita as it is, it's in some cases, in fact in many cases, they're used interchangeably. Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. And part of the reason for that is Prabhupada understands. Here's a little, I'll come back to the question I asked you. Satyaraj, this is an appreciation of Prabhupada's message. Satyaraj Prabhu, Stephen Rosen, has dedicated himself for the past 30 plus years with the mission of connecting scholars with Vaishnavism and the Hare Krishna movement in particular. So one of the things that he has done to do that, besides writing books, he takes his books to the American Academy of Religion conference. It happens every year. And it's not just American professors, but all over the world. It's such a, lofty assembly of religious professors. They come together and have a conference every year, and devotees go there every year, and the BBT goes every year and displays their books, and Satyaraj goes there every year and kind of schmoozes and tries to sell some of his books. So there are, he shared this with me. There are two professors that very, very long ago, very early, they kind of established their niche, which was they would comment on the newest Bhagavad Gita commentaries that would come out. That was like, they were specialists in that area. And because Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita came out very early in all of that, they commented on Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. And anybody that knows academia knows what the program is. You criticize. Oh, it's not good because... That's what scholars do. And then they say, this is good, and instead. So they spoke badly about Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, like from years and years. And every year he would meet with them, and it was the same thing. Got to be tiring. And part of their criticism was, this Sanskrit word, Prabhupada is translated in that way, instead of, this Sanskrit word should be translated this way. It was that way. That was their criticism. He didn't like his Sanskrit transliterations. Then one year, this is maybe 5-6 years ago, much to Satyaraj's surprise, they both approached him, because they already had a relationship with him, and said, you know what, I've changed my opinion. The very best translation of Bhagavad Gita on the market is Swami Prabhupada's. And the reason is, although he didn't give the literal meaning, so that was our complaint before, we've understood after reading so many translations, the literal meaning doesn't capture the essence, but Swami Prabhupada got the essence. In every translation, it's the essence. And he's in his fidelity to bhakti is, from chapter 2 through chapter 18, it's bhakti. The words and the purports, and that's the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. Although they're scholars, and scholars generally means impersonalists, he's true to the bhakti school, every word. And as Prabhupada said, every word is leading to bhakti. He just said bhakti. And therefore Karma Yoga became bhakti. So now what's the difference between Karma Yoga and Bhakti? Go ahead.
Karma Yoga is refers to activities based on one's own desire. Bhakti Yoga refers to business.
Okay, that's a nice explanation. Anyone else want to offer something? Yes. Okay, similar, and then in contrast, Karma Yoga is I desire and I offer their fruits to Krishna. Then you were going to say that. Anyone else want to volunteer? I mean, it's not something additional. Okay, so external in the sense that I can offer the results to Krishna, but my interest may be not Krishna's interest. My interest may be something else. Like, for example, I don't want the reaction. I want moksha. So I'll do and offer the results to Krishna with the aim of moksha, not Krishna's interest. And bhakti, another explanation is, of course, bhakti already is, it's for Krishna, with devotion for Krishna. There may be mixed karma mishra bhakti, jnana mishra bhakti, then shuddha bhakti, but the intention is to become free from those other karma and jnana tendencies to come to the position of simply for Krishna. And another way of looking at the distinction is the fruits. If you're doing for Krishna, recognizing that everything comes from Krishna, it belongs to Krishna, and we're using it for Krishna and Krishna's purpose, offering the fruits is already there. But if I'm just, my program is offering the fruits, do my duty and offer the fruits, it doesn't necessarily awaken, it's not the mature stage yet of bhakti, of love. So the offering of the fruits is already a subset within bhakti yoga, but there's more. So karma yoga can be simply external, like offering of the results to Krishna with a different intention than Krishna's satisfaction, which is the mature stage and the purpose of karma yoga. So I'm going through that because it's in the purport of this verse that we're going to be looking at, where it's the graduate study description of what's from Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita karma yoga in the mature stage, in the graduate study, becomes what Lord Vishnu is instructing to Kardama, which sounds very similar to what Krishna is instructing to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. So now remember, this all fits into this picture of moving from Sakkam Bhakti to Nishkam Bhakti. You know, where we are to where we want to go. Devotional service that's unmixed with what's in it for me. Calculation. Just for Krishna. Calculation. Unconditional and unmotivated devotional service. That's the Bhagavatam's message. Ahotukiya pratyata yatma supersedati. So that's the teaching in chapter 2 of canto 1. Now here's chapter 21 of canto 3, showing, demonstrating how to get there, what it looks like. So Kardama has a desire. He wants a qualified wife, qualified like he is, to fulfill the desire of his father to create praja, and also to have a son who's the personality of Godhead. It's a very high desire. Vishnu has come to say, I know your heart's desire, and I have therefore made an arrangement, and here's how it's going to play out. 2 days from now, Swayambhu Manu is going to come, and with his wife, and they're going to make a marriage proposal and say yes, because the girl is very qualified. So text 29, Lord Vishnu says, you will marry her, and in your marriage you'll have first 9 daughters, and those 9 daughters will then become the wives of the other sages. The other sages who are also sons of Brahma, they will be married to the other sages, and in combination, your daughters and those sages will then further the purpose of Lord Brahma. So you'll be doing a service on top of a service, because Lord Brahma said, help me populate this universe with good population and also the various species. So that's going to happen, he's explained to him. And now, the next verse, text 30, with your heart cleansed by properly carrying out my command, resigning to me the fruits of all your acts, you will finally attain to me. So, Prabhupada has taught us, that in order to go back to Godhead, you have to become free from material desire. Right? I mean, in order to enter into fire, you must become fire. In order to go back to Godhead, you must become pure. So he's acknowledging you have material desire. But you become free material desire, free from the material portion of your desire, by following my instruction, by the dedication of your sakama bhakti unto me, which will gradually free you from the material portion of your desire. Your heart will become fully cleansed, and you'll attain me. Go from sakama to nishkam bhakti. So listen to the purport. This is the graduate study look at how karma yoga can take you to bhakti yoga. Here the words tirti kritashesha kriyarta are significant. Tirta means a sanctified place where charity is given. Tirta, holy place. People used to go to places of pilgrimage and give munificently in charity. This system is still current. Therefore, the Lord said, quote, in order to sanctify your activities and the results of your actions, you will offer everything unto me. So, Yajna, chapter 3, Bhagavad Gita. By the process of sacrifice, and then there's further description of the process of sacrifice in detail, different. Some people do it this way, some people do it that way. Chapter 4, there's a whole series of verses. But there's a principle. Does anybody know the verse? Brahmarpanam, Brahmahavir, Brahmagnau, Brahmanauhutam. You know that verse? Chapter 4. Yeah? So, here's a little... That's a verse in chapter 4, after which Krishna describes many people do sacrifice this way, that way, the other way. Once upon a time, there was a professor at Columbia University, Professor Rao. And I found out later he was a hardcore Mayavadi. But he was a nice man, you know, polite, at least. And he taught me that verse is what they say in Shingeri Math instead of Sharira Vidyajal. Before they take their meal, they say that verse. Because the verse says, through sacrifice, there are different elements that become situated in Brahman. So that's how they justify eating, because they're impersonalists. Everything's one, so why not eat air or the rug or, you know, anything? By sacrifice, by the process of sacrifice, you render something sacred or transcendental. And then you accept, because you're eating Brahman. You, who are Brahman, are eating Brahman, because you did the sacrifice. It renders it into the transcendental realm, as does the person and the place and so on. So Tirtha is a sacred place because so much rendering of sacrifice takes place. It's a holy place for that reason, among other reasons. Therefore the Lord said, in order to sanctify your activities and the results of your actions, you will offer everything to me. he's paraphrasing what Vishnu is saying to Kardama. So it's a principle of how we can go from Sakkama to Nishkam Bhakti, offering everything to Krishna. Well, that's Karma Yoga. It can become Bhakti Yoga if you're properly guided and you chant your rounds and so forth. The inclination to do what you do in service to Krishna, as service, the service attitude or aptitude of the soul awakens through chanting properly. He continues, this is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you sacrifice, the results should be given to me only. In another place in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord said, I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices, all penances, and everything done for the welfare of mankind or society. What's that verse? Last verse of chapter 5. Bhoktaram yagatapasam sarvalokam maheshwaram suradam sarvabhutanam yatvamam shantam richati. He doesn't give the Sanskrit, he just paraphrases the verse. So, the message with two scriptural references plus paraphrasing what Vishnu is saying, we're getting the lesson how to go from Sakkam to Nishkam Bhakti. Then he says it again without scriptural reference. All activities, therefore, whether for the welfare of family, material, society, material, country or humanity at large, material, must be performed in Krishna consciousness. That is the instruction given by the Lord to Kardama Muni. Maharaj Yudhisthira welcomed Narada Muni, quote, wherever you are present, that place becomes sanctified because the Lord himself is always seated in your heart. So if we make the heart pure, it makes it inviting for Krishna to come. So part of what we do is we chant Hare Krishna to purify our heart. Cheto darpana marjanam, to cleanse the heart. But then, you know, we chant and then we go throw some dirt on ourselves through our fruitive activities. So what to do about that part of our life? Because we have desires. We also make our heart cleansed by following the instructions that Lord Vishnu gives to Kardama, or the instructions that Krishna gives to Brahma in Brahma Samhita, or what Krishna gives to Arjuna in Bhagavad. We situate ourselves with submission unto the instructions of the Supreme Lord or his representatives, to dedicate those activities which are our desires instead to the service of the Supreme Lord for his satisfaction. That's bhakti. There's a distinction between karma yoga and bhakti. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam, as opposed to Sakkama. I do this because I like it and I offer result to the Supreme Lord because I don't want the bondage of karmic reaction. That's karma yoga. I mean, kind of grossly stated, but that's what karma yoga is. And bhakti is whatever's in there, mix something for Krishna, something for me. Let me dedicate those things that are for me, my family, society, country, and living entities in general, my concern, my philanthropy concern and altruism concern. Let me dedicate all that, whatever that is, to Krishna's satisfaction, because they're part and parcel of Krishna, living entities, for that reason. I see them in connection with Krishna, and there's certain circumstances in connection with Krishna. Let me do the service for Krishna's satisfaction. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ujjate. And one who does like that then their heart becomes cleansed, not just from chanting, but also from how you engage in your activity in Krishna consciousness. The heart becomes cleansed. And then when the heart becomes cleansed, what happens? Krishna takes shelter there. One can feel your activity being directed by Krishna. In mature stage, one can feel activity being directed by Krishna, like we were discussing this morning about making choices. Go ask Krishna. Turn left or turn right. If we're not so advanced, we can't go and ask Krishna. We have other things. But at very advanced states, their activities are directed by Krishna. No question about it. No question about it. Their activities are directed by Krishna. Whatever it is, their activities are directed by Krishna. Just a little sharing. We'll come back. There's a group of devotees that go regularly to Udupi for like a yatra. And over doing this year after year after year, they've developed a nice relationship with the sannyasis and the grihasthas or managing the nine different mutts. So in the course of that exchange, many nice things have happened, but one of them is this. They, because we're of the same lineage, the cyclic succession, they wanted to know a little bit more about ISKCON. So the devotees wanted to show some appreciation for Prabhupada. So they showed him, they showed them, like a group of sannyasis, this "Your Ever Well Wisher," you know, the documentary on Prabhupada's life. And after seeing that documentary on Prabhupada's life, one of their comments was, "We could never do that." And they were very specific. They were referring to Prabhupada chanting in Golden Gate Park with the hippies dancing around, and it's like a bad dream or something. And they said, "We could never do that. Your Swamiji is empowered." But what was the empowerment? It was the instruction of a spiritual master. Not because, hey, this looks like fun, or hey, this looks like a risk. The instruction of a spiritual master. And because of that, he was protected. His heart was free from impressions and contaminations, and Krishna was within his heart, directing him and protecting him. Otherwise, not possible, they said. Not possible. Empowered directly. But scripture says what they said. In order to do what Prabhupada did, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tara Pravartana. I'll tell you another little anecdote. Some of you may know Yasumati Nandana Prabhu from Ahmedabad. Yes? Prabhupada disciple. Wonderful devotee. Super brilliant. So very early in our movement, he told me this story. He went to visit, just down the street on Bhaktisiddhanta Road is what's now known as Madhava Mat, or the house of Nandanacharya. Maybe some of you have been there. So Madhava Maharaj was a little envious of Prabhupada. He was very successful. But he was scholarly, and Yasumati was making friends with him because he, you know, from way back, way, way back. Because when devotees first came to Mayapur, they didn't have any place to stay, so some of them stayed at the Madhava Mat. So Yasumati Nandana was visiting him, and Madhava Maharaj made a comment, like, as you say in India, he passed a remark that your Swamiji was successful because he was so good in business, and he just used his business acumen to spread Krishna consciousness. And Yasu blasted him, saying, "You haven't read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know the first thing of what Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says. It's not by business acumen, it's by being empowered by Krishna, otherwise it's not possible. And you're not empowered by Krishna because you don't have that faith in Krishna." He, like, let him have it. And went back and told Prabhupada, and Prabhupada appreciated how strongly and, you know, clearly and scripturally he replied, and then said, you know, he instructed, "Don't go further to visit Madhava Maharaj, although we had some friendship together, now he would act to erode your faith. And here's another Prabhupada story. In New York years ago, I'll get back to the verse. There was a Bengali doctor, Sukumal Roy Chaudhary, and he was like 40 years ago. He was into methane gas and how to use gobar gas to power cooking and other purposes for alternative energy kind of thing. So many years ago, and he shared with me when he was a young boy. He used to go to Mayapur. He didn't live in Mayapur. He lived in Bengal, but he would go to Mayapur because even then it was because of Bhaktisiddhanta's presence, it was a nice, sacred place to go and associate with saintly people. And he said he would sit, and he described to me the place at Madhava Maharaj's, that there's that little place, there's their deity, and then a little, like a place where people would stand to see the arti, and then over there was like a hall with a covering over it, mandap, I guess you call it. And Prabhupada would regularly go to that place when he was young, as a householder. And he would sit and discuss with others. And Sukumal Roy Chaudhary said, of all the people that would sit and have Krishna Katha, I appreciated the most Abai. Because his thinking process was always so deep and very enlivening. And then when I saw later he had gone to the West and started the Hare Krishna movement, I was so happy. He was like a fan of... He wasn't a sadhaka, but he was a fan of Prabhupada. He had deep appreciation for Prabhupada. Even when he was younger, as did Bhaktisiddhanta, that he would listen and his writing was wonderful. So the ground was being nurtured by his association with Bhaktisiddhanta and his service to Bhaktisiddhanta and his regularly hearing from Bhaktisiddhanta, and he became what he became through Krishna Shakti Vina Nahe Tara Pravartana, by empowerment. So one can take Karma Yoga under the instruction of the Supreme Lord and the representatives of the Supreme Lord and become elevated to the position where there's no more material desire. There's no more affinity for matter. One may still have a desire to maintain one's family and one's duties and responsibilities nicely, but not with the same motivation and purpose behind it, but simply for Krishna and the glorification of Krishna and the honor of Krishna and the happiness of Krishna. Nishkam follows. And when that situation exists, Krishna is then guiding one's every activity and protecting one from further contamination. It's right in Bhagavad Gita. The last of the Chatur Sloki verses, Krishna says, Yanadipena Basvata, situated within the heart of that person who is completely engaged in my service, even residual tendencies towards prior association with matter, I personally intervene and protect them from that with the shining lamp of knowledge. Aham again jam tamaha, from the darkness born of ignorance. Those prior tendencies are personally protected against by Krishna. So even one may be in an unwholesome environment, Krishna's protection is there. Krishna's in the heart. So such a person, Yudhisthira is saying to Narada, Yudhisthira is saying to Narada that you are such a person. But wherever you are is a holy place. We're going back. The holy place is where so much sacrifice and sacrifice and sacrifice, so the whole place becomes sanctified. Anybody that goes there becomes sanctified. But you associate with a person that does like that, you become sanctified like visiting a holy place by the association of such a person. And such a person then speaks such messages. And if one hears those messages properly, one's heart can also become sanctified. Even there's material desire. along with the devotional ones. Follow the instructions of such personalities, and one's heart becomes cleansed. That's exactly what Kardama is being told by Lord Vishnu. Similarly, if we act in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the Lord and his representative, then everything is sanctified. This is the indication given to Kardama Muni, who acted on it and therefore received the most excellent wife and child, as will be disclosed in later verses. It's different but similar to what happened to Dhruva. Dhruva got his kingdom. But when he got his kingdom, it wasn't, oh, now I got my kingdom. Yay! He ruled as a king simply as a service to the personality of Godhead without any affinity. His revenge was gone and his material enjoyment propensity was gone. It was done exclusively in devotion for the Supreme Lord. How did that happen? Two things. Narada, primary. His association with Narada and the instructions of Narada. He followed the instructions of Narada with a grateful heart. And he came on the other side of his Sakam Bhakti to Shuddha Bhakti. In such a way that the desire was fulfilled without the contamination. Same with Kardama. You'll get your wife, you'll get your child, everything will be fulfilled, but your heart will be completely cleansed. How? By following the instructions I'm giving you. So this taking karma yoga and elevating it to the pure devotional platform. So in that sense, karma yoga is a subset of bhakti yoga, so you can use them interchangeably, which Prabhupada did sometimes. Karma yoga means bhakti yoga. Because within bhakti yoga, there's the detached work offering the results of the Supreme, but more. And by following the instructions given in the Bhaktivedanta purports, we too can come to that stage. I want to end just by reading, this is a sneak preview for tomorrow morning. In the next verse, Lord Vishnu speaks again something that's very similar to an understanding that's in Bhagavad Gita from chapter 9. Here's the verse. Lord Vishnu says to Kardama, showing compassion to all living entities, you will attain self-realization. Giving assurance of safety to all, you will perceive your own self as well as all the universes in me and myself in you. Sound familiar from Bhagavad Gita? Chapter 9? It's what I call the Upanishadic double talk. Everything is in me but not in me. You'll see me and you and me. Like, you know, we're in the room and out of the room. We can be in the room, that's fine. We can be out of the room, that's fine. We can't be. How can we be in the room and out of the room at the same time? Double talk. Come on. But in transcendental reality, it's not a contradiction. It's not an impossibility. But it's something that needs a finer understanding of who is the Supreme Lord and what is our relationship with Him to put it together. That which is a material contradiction, when one's consciousness becomes properly spiritually situated or elevated, then that which appears to be contradictory isn't at all. He says, in this self-realization state, feeling great compassion for all, you will perceive your own self as well as all the universes in me and myself in you. So that means, does that mean that in you are all living entities and the universes? Because they're in Krishna and Krishna's in you. So you're the resting place of all living entities. I'm God. Ta-da! See, I knew it all along. That's not what it means. But impersonalists take it that way because it's like linear, and also their disposition of heart. So it takes proper guidance to understand these things properly, and we'll discuss that tomorrow morning. But a connection between Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. There's the concept, and then Purana means it's history. It's like, here's the concept in life. Here's what it looks like. And here's a devotee, in this case, Kardama, who exhibits that capacity. And along with bhakti, there's a big mystery. At least it's a mystery for those who aren't devotees. But for those who are devotees, the mystery is revealed through the medium of devotional service. Sarahasyam, from the second canto of Bhagavatam. The mystery. There's a whole series of verses where Prabhupada talks about the mystery. The mystery is devotional service itself. The relationship between a living entity in a mood of love, in service, to the personality of Godhead. It's very mysterious. Where the Lord feels the love of the devotee so strong. When the love of the devotee is very strong, the Lord subordinates himself to the devotee. He who is ajita becomes jitta. It's a mystery. Krishna becomes afraid of this little stick in Mother Jasoda's hand. He who is feared by fear personified cries, not pretentious tears, he cries out of fear of the little stick in Mother Jasoda's hand. So she throws the stick away, so he stops crying. It's very mysterious. Krishna becomes controlled by the love of his devotee. Or, as it's stated here, that everything, all living entities, and all of the universes are within Krishna, and Krishna was within the heart of the devotee. It's a mystery. We'll discuss it tomorrow. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Sadhana bhakti also. At least we are thinking we are practicing bhakti yoga, but when we are discussing the contrast between karma yoga and bhakti yoga, a lot of things we do what we want to do, but then we try to make it Krishna conscious. So is that wrong or an offense, or is that process naturally going to push us forward, upward towards complete nishkama bhakti? How do we deal with it? Should we just let it happen, or should we really get aggressive about not doing it?
What was the third option? You had a nice menu going. I got the first two. I didn't get the third one. One is we're going to stay stuck. The other is going to push us towards pure devotion. What was the third one?
Should we... No, very seriously, try not to do karma yoga means not do anything that is coming out of our own desire, but exclusively follow the instructions of Krishna, which is, at least it appears, not possible for me.
No, it's possible. Let's look at the verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That's the defining verse of the whole text. Anyabhi lasha dushunyam gyanakarma janavritam. The operative word there is anushilana. Prabhupada doesn't quote the verse, but he speaks the verse in the introduction to Nectar Devotion and calls it a sort of cultivation. Bhakti is a sort of cultivation. It says it several times. That's anushilana. Anu, it means to follow. Shilana means conduct or behavior or activity. Anu, shilana. We're cultivate, following the great souls. We're not great souls, but we're somehow gotten the merciful association of one very great soul, our founder Acharya, and through him access to the disciplic succession. So we're down here and they're up there, and they're giving us teachings how to get from down here to up there by their example and by their precept. So it's not of the options that you gave, it's not that automatically anything. There is purification that takes place even unknowingly, but I can continue to throw dirt after getting purified. So it's not automatically, I just like fasten a seatbelt and zoom zoom off we go and we reach Krishna Loka. It's not automatic, it's not a mechanical process. Or another way of saying the same thing is, phrase that I like is, we're not the International Society for Behavior Modification Incorporated. Just modify your behaviors, strap in, and you go to Krishna Loka. That's not sufficient. Chaitanya Charitamrita language, one can go on chanting the holy name for millions of lifetimes and not get the fruit of love of God if one continues to make offenses. So in addition to the behaviors, there's a consciousness change or an effort to receive the instructions or the essence of the instructions in addition to. So when that, we'll call that sincerity, to reach the goal, although I'm here, I'm not at the goal. I recognize my limitations, contaminations, imperfections, shortcomings, but I wish to go beyond them. That's the sincerity part. So then I can progressively move from cleansing, dirtying, cleansing, dirtying, cleansing, dirtying, remaining attached to material contamination in spite of understanding instructions not to do so. So our saying the same thing in different language, our process, the Bhagavat Marg process, is a process of nivritti, gradually diminishing material involvement, or gradually diminishing our affinity for matter by gradually increasing our affinity for bhakti. So initially we don't understand what it is. We just do it and it feels good, so we keep doing it. We're told it's good for us, so we keep doing it. Is this mode of goodness? That's good. But there has to come a point where a little light goes on and says it's more than just the behavior, or doing it because it's duty. Bhakti Vinod Thakur speaks about the distinction between duty and love. The light has to go on. It's not just duty. It'll make me pious. And my mother and father taught me to be pious. So I do it because it's pious. So a light has to go on. It's more than pious. It's for Krishna. And that's bhakti, like these definitions that were given earlier. And then I cultivate that, like little spark and fan the spark, the bhakti spark. So to do what I do for Krishna, that's what this verse is. Of course, Kardamuni is way beyond anything we are, but it's the principle is the same wherever we are. And we cultivate the bhakti principle along with the theistic conduct. You know, doing our duties with detachment from the fruits, and offering the fruits to Krishna, we carry it the next day, the bhakti principle. And the most effective means for this age for awakening the bhakti principle is chanting offenselessly. So we avoid the, so there's another effort besides chanting without offenses, and it's a consciousness shift from just a behavior to how we regard the name, how we regard devotees, how we regard the scripture, how we regard the process of devotional service, and so forth. You know, it's not just information, it's consciousness. And regarding with great reverence and affection the holy name and the devotees and the opportunity to serve the devotees and so forth. When that light goes on and it's cultivated along with the activities, the theistic conduct and the activities of bhakti, then we'll progress further towards the goal as we do that. And the opportunity is there for every one of us, and that little light goes on at some point, and we can just, you know, we have, there's a free will thing about it. Well, I'm not ready for that yet, or I'm too much absorbed in my stuff or something. So then we don't progress very much. We're protected to a certain degree, but not progress back home, back to Godhead. But so the opportunity is given through the medium and principally the association. How we take the association of the holy name, scripture, devotees, deities, the holy Dham. Anything else?
Can I ask another question?
Okay. Sure.
So, following up on the same theme, you know, we hear about Karma Mishra Bhakti and Jnana Mishra Bhakti.
Yeah.
So, somebody who's performing or practicing, trying to practice Bhakti Yoga, but it is still Karma Mishra Bhakti. So, there is elements of Karma Yoga in that, or they're mutually exclusive? Are they the same? Karma Mishra Bhakti and Karma Yoga, are they the same?
Okay. I have to think about it. I'm sure there is some overlap. I'm sure there's some distinction. Exactly what where the overlap and what the distinction is, I'd have to consider that carefully. I'm sure there's some overlap, but it's not a one-to-one exchange because they're different terms. Here's the initial thought. Karma Yoga has like a big range. Like, in other words, someone who's an impersonalist could say, I'm performing Karma Yoga, like that verse that I quoted, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir Brahmagnau Brahmanau Hutam. I'm offering to the Supreme Brahman the fruits of my work. I'm doing Karma Yoga with the objective of becoming cleansed of contamination, achieving liberation, and becoming one with the Supreme. It's not a proper application of the principle, but it may be one's conception of, I'm sincerely applying the principle so I can become one with the Supreme. And with justification of the verse of Bhagavad Gita, I'm cleansing my attraction for material enjoyment by offering the results unto the Supreme. And then, intermediate and then advanced. And when becoming advanced, I would think that Karma Mishra Bhakti falls in the more advanced stages than the intermediate stage, but not yet the full stage of Shuddha Bhakti, where one can also be offering the results of the Supreme because it's a subset of bhakti. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.